Let's get right into our big story. If you missed our last two shows and if you've avoided all tech news and any regular news or social media, you might not already know that this week a court in California asked Apple to create software that would help the FBI crack open the work cell phone of one of the shooters in last year's terrorist attack in San Bernardino. Today, the Department of Justice filed a motion to force Apple to comply with the court order. And then this afternoon, House Commerce Committee asked the FBI director and Tim Cook to testify on encryption. We are joined right now by Katie Benner from the New York Times, who has been reporting on this story and who has an excellent profile of Apple CEO Tim Cook and why he has taken this strong stance for digital privacy. Welcome, Katie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. I know you're busy. I know you're doing more stories. Today, the Justice Department called Tim Cook's refusal to comply with the order as, quote, marketing, kind of weird marketing strategy to sort of place yourself and your company on the side of a terrorist. But okay, well, why do you think he really is doing this?
Yeah, I think that the marketing thing is sort of something that doesn't really make a lot of sense when you think about how long Apple's been thinking about privacy. After the Edward Snowden revelations, when we saw how much data the government was trying to gather using technology companies, Apple decided it needed to be more vocal about its stand on privacy. But internally, the company had been talking about this for years, so I don't know that marketing is really accurate. Tim Cook, throughout his time at Apple, had always been very behind the scenes. You know, he'd worked hard within the company. He had a reputation for always speaking his mind. And since becoming the CEO, he has done that. He's used his platform as the head of one of the biggest companies, sometimes the biggest when Google's not the biggest, companies in the world, to take a strong stand on issues that he truly believes in. He has a belief that corporate America and CEOs actually have a civic duty to try to make the world better and to stand up for what's right, and that unfortunately they don't do that enough. And so he's really, in many ways, just doing what he thinks that everybody else should do too.
I know today, of course, Harper Lee passed away, and he tweeted the one thing that doesn't abide by majority rule is a person's conscience. A Harper Lee quote. So what in Cook's past do you think brought him here and made him take this stance now?
You know, so Cook's an interesting guy. He really values his privacy, but he has been very public on hot button issues that not everybody agrees on. Everything from gay rights. He came out in an editorial in Business Week and he revealed that he was gay. He's taken strong stance on the environment. And he talks about growing up in a small town in Alabama in a speech delivered at the United Nations when he was being honored by his alma mater, Auburn University. He talked about being a teenager and seeing the Ku Klux Klan burning a cross on the lawn of a black family and how that really impacted him for his entire life. You know, he couldn't stop thinking about that. He keeps pictures of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert F. Kennedy in the office. He sometimes quotes civic leaders. This is something he's always believed, but much more quietly because, as we all know, Steve Jobs is a real powerhouse CEO, and he kind of took up all of the limelight within the company. So he had these formative experiences as somebody growing up in, you know, the rural South, somebody who was gay and had not been vocal about it previously, and somebody who has a deep, abiding feeling that the environment is something that all people need to take care of. These are things that he's sort of lived with his entire life.
Now, one thing I found very interesting about your piece, Katie, is that you go into kind of detail into the background of kind of Apple's history dealing with the government and, you know, phones that are brought into them one after the other after the other. Sometimes they weren't even locked to begin with. Really seems like at this point, this was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. In this case, the FBI Apple asked the FBI to issue this request under seal, to not make it public. FBI chose to make it public. Do you think this is kind of an indication of kind of the government's intention with this? Maybe it goes against what they're saying, that it's not initially about just one device, but I mean, choosing to make it public kind of makes it about something much greater. Would you agree?
Well, I think that in a previous story that I wrote with my colleague Eric Lischblau, the government intimates that yes, this felt like the perfect case for them to use to make what had been a theoretical discussion about privacy concrete, to really force the argument and force companies and the American people to have to truly decide what it means to have a strong stand on privacy versus a strong stand on national security. You know, we've always had that tension in this country. brought home after 9/11, brought home again, you know, sort of with the Snowden revelations, where we've seen the country seesaw back and forth between a strong stand on civil liberties and privacy versus making sure that we have strong security. So the government, you know, has I think been pretty open about the fact that for them, this is the perfect case. It was a terrible and horrible thing that happened in San Bernardino. And nobody is going to say that this government investigation needs to be obstructed. But when you take a longer view, it's at what cost? And that's the question that Apple is asking. You know, if we were to build this alternative operating system and software, once it's created, it exists, can be replicated. Human beings make it, they know how it's done, and it becomes immediately a target for hackers and criminals who would want the same thing. Is it worth it to help out in this one case to get into a phone the contents of which nobody really knows what they are?
So what do you make of the news that just came out today that that they could have had access to all of this information, but somebody somewhere, the FBI or the health department or somebody reset the password on the iCloud? So this phone was being backed up to iCloud and someone reset the password. What do you make of that information coming out today?
Well, I wasn't in the room, and I think that even Apple senior executives have said on background that they cannot say why that happened. Nobody really knows why that happened. I think we've seen in the past that the government hasn't been great with technology. Mm-hmm. Their own systems have been hacked. The Office of Personnel Management, I believe the CIA director's own email, the government coming to Apple to unlock phones, all they would have had to do is hit the slide button because they weren't actually locked. You know, so it does raise the question as to whether or not how familiar the government is with technology. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know there are a lot of conspiracy theories bring about why that happened. I wouldn't want to weigh in that way.
So I know the New York Times editorial board came out today. Can you talk a little bit about why they took a side in this issue?
So the editorial board came out and they decided to come down on the side of what they would describe as civil liberties. And, basically the idea being that this is a challenging case. It is a sensitive case because of the gravity of the crime that was committed. But that does not mean that the government should be allowed to ask private companies to make technology for it. That they should not be allowed to tell a private company, whether it's Apple or anybody else, that you actually have to build tools for us that we can then use to weaken the security measures we've created.